Got Chris Vernon on today's episode. Finally, a reunion with me and Verno. It's a really good conversation with Verno. Hope you enjoy. We got 10 semi-bold predictions for the remainder of the NBA season and the NBA draft. All that coming up next with Chris Vernon. Joining me today is a very, very special guest. The most special guest, Verno!
Come on!
What's up, Chris? Good to see your face.
Good to see you.
Good to hear your voice, see your face. How you doing, man? How you enjoying this season, Chris?
I mean, it was okay. And then recently, it has just been really, really rough. You also, who are hosting an NBA podcast, we are to this terrible part of the year where we have this combination of teams trying to have their guys not be injured, teams coasting to the finish line, and then teams actively attempting to lose down the stretch, which has led to just insane results every single night. And I cannot decide whether or not I should take anything from them or not.
Well, and then your Grizzlies have been terrible as well.
Oh, my God. I mean, that
so
has
that doesn't
gone,
help your case for enjoying the season.
That has gone all the wrong way. Even when, you know, so they lost on Friday to the Los Angeles Clippers. But I had the NCAA tournament somewhat to distract me. And then the good part about that was that the Grizzlies lost on Friday. They don't play again until Tuesday night against Utah. So at least I'm not going to get any bad news, at least until we get to like Monday and we get an injury report, right? No. The Saturday night news drop, Brandon Clark's out for the season. It's like, wait, what? I was just trying to have like one peaceful, fun, let's just watch college basketball weekend, and still I got kicked in the nuts.
Well, today we're doing our bold predictions. We could call it semi-bold predictions as a throwback to some of our shows. I might as well start us off, Chris, since talking Memphis.
Oh, great. Here we go. This is why you brought me on. You literally brought me on so that you could throw dirt on the Grizzlies.
Well, okay, here's enjoy. The thing. I had the Grizzlies as like a tier two contender before the season. So I was high on them. I was really high on the Grizzlies before the season. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if you know that, but it's true. But my first bold prediction for the remainder of the season, the Grizzlies fall to the play-in.
Oh, no.
They lose both.
And they miss the playoffs.
Chris, it doesn't
my
look
nightmare.
Good.
My nightmare.
They're bottom 10 in defensive rating in 2025. They haven't beaten a team over 500 since they beat the Bucks on February 2nd. They're 0-9 since then. Average score of 126 to 114. Ja Morant out Tuesday. I thought he'd be back Tuesday against Utah, out with a hamstring injury. The injury report came out on Monday. Chris,
The team's
collapsing.
You're not. I'm aware, Kevin.
It has collapsed. Past tense, then.
I mean, look. And the worst thing is, he had the best game of his season against Cleveland. And playing against the best team in the NBA thus far this year at that point, he was the best player on the floor. He was unbelievable. Nobody came along for the ride with him, but he was otherworldly. So then they had a back-to-back. That was on a Friday night, right? Saturday, they played a back-to-back. He doesn't play in the back-to-back. It was Miami, Tony Allen jersey retirement night, and they smoked the Heat, who have, you want to talk about collapse.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They smoked the Heat that night, and Ja didn't play, which, okay, he's not playing on a second half of back-to-back. But he's listed with shoulder soreness. And then they get to the next game, and he's listed as hamstring soreness. Mm-hmm. And then they get to the next game, and he's listed as hamstring soreness. And then we get to this weekend, and he's listed as hamstring strain. So we don't even know what is going on. We don't know if they, like, I don't know if these guys get hurt in practice.
Didn't he say, like, that his shoulder won't be better until the offseason? So you'd think it's the shoulder, but maybe it's both. But why are both not on the report? Is there not enough space for both in there?
I don't know what is going on. I don't know if he twinged it at practice. Like, evidently, their practices must just be the most hell-spun mixture because if you look at tonight, bro, all right, my beloved Marvin Bagley, who was attained at the trade deadline, never plays, right? Go look at their injury report for tomorrow at Utah. Marvin Bagley is somehow out with a concussion. He doesn't play. When did he get a concussion? They've been in Los Angeles for 3 days because they haven't played since Friday. And I don't know if he hit his head on a door frame, but it's just a cop.
That's what happened to Fab Mello.
I know.
Years ago. R.I.P. Fab Mello. Yeah, but he walked or ran into a door frame.
Unbelievable. Like, I don't know how Marvin Bagley got a concussion between not playing basketball and they've been in LA for 3 days, but he's not playing anymore. So yeah,
there's a lot of things that could happen. Partying in a weekend in LA.
They've gone the wrong way very fast. Here's the only thing that I will hold on to. The only thing that I am holding on to is all these other teams have this, like, We keep looking at the standings, like what you're saying, and being like, good grief. And there are teams that are above them. Obviously, Houston got on a run at the best time they could get on a run. Minnesota and the Warriors, up until tonight, had been playing very well recently. But then the Warriors dropped that game to the Hawks. Minnesota, as we are recording on Monday night, Minnesota lost tonight at Indiana. The Lakers lost tonight at Orlando. And so it's like, you're looking around the league and it's like you're 5-5 in your last 10, but you keep having these losing streaks. But there's a bunch of teams that could really be taking advantage of it that aren't taking advantage of it thus far. And the one thing that we hold on to is, let's just say that this is bubble wrap Ja Morant time, right? And like, let's just get to the playoffs. That if you have Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson, and Desmond Bain, you have been successful as long as you can put those three guys on the floor. And if you can put those three guys on the floor and you get to the moment where the games matter most, then you can still have a chance at it, right?
But what's wrong with the defense, though? Like I agree with you offensively, but like the defense is just falling off a cliff.
They don't have anybody that can defend. Right? They don't have defensive
besides Jaren Jackson.
They don't they have one defensive player. One. And the best big in terms of being able to switch and move on the perimeter is Brandon Clark. So that is a monstrous loss.
Yeah, it is.
But it's very, very difficult because your starting center, Zach Edey, he's a drop coverage guy. You and I have talked drop coverage for years and years. Yep. I'm not a huge fan, but I am. It's very reminiscent of, you remember when we used to get in the arguments for so many years about Rudy Gobert, and Utah did not have, they have Donovan Mitchell, they have Mike Conley, they have Joe Ingles, they have these guys on the perimeter, and it's like, okay, just funnel them to this guy, and he's going to swat everything, but they're not staying in front of anybody anyway. And then you have him go to Minnesota, and last year when they were so successful, they've got Anthony Edwards, and they've got McDaniels, and they've got these guys that can like bear down on the perimeter and stay in front of people. Well, Edie's a drop coverage big that doesn't swat things away. So you can't just filter it to him. And you're out there with Jalen Wells and Luke Kennard and John Morant and Desmond Bane, and they don't stay in front of anybody. And so now you're in scramble mode. And so you've just got a mess on your hands for sure. But the one thing is, I think there's a lot of these teams throughout the NBA, the Grizzlies obviously not excluded, that have to get their mojo back. There is a very small amount of teams that you look and you go, they're playing their best basketball right now, right? Very small amount. Like even Cleveland, they're not playing their best basketball right now. Their star player's been, you know, going the wrong direction. And so the hope is, yes, it's been terrible in Memphis, But it's been terrible a lot of places recently in terms of people feeling like their team is peaking at the right time.
Yes. And I think with Memphis, part of my concern is the fact they have one of the toughest schedules remaining in the NBA. After Utah on Tuesday, they got OKC, Lakers, Celtics, Warriors, Heat, Pistons, but five of those next six games, teams over 500. Brutal. And then they close the season against the Wolves, the Nuggets, and the Mavericks. It's I think the eighth hardest schedule by opponent win percentage remaining in the league. And so that's a lot tougher than some of the other teams in the lump that they're in. So they haven't had success against those, you know, above 500 right. teams. They have a lot of them coming up. Some of those teams are hot. Others, as you said, are in a similar position as Memphis, where it's like, well, you know, I don't know what to make of this right now. Like, even with the Lakers, they lose again on Monday night to the Magic. Their defense has completely fallen apart. The Lakers have. LeBron just comes back from injury on Saturday against the Bulls, and he's not looking like his Draymond self right now. So they could fall as well. There's a lot of teams that could. Chris, what's your first bold prediction for the rest of the season?
Neither of the one seeds will be in the NBA Finals.
Wow. Huh. So no yep. Cavs. So I'm guessing you would lean Celtics in the East then. What about the West?
I would lean Nuggets.
Okay. Still, even though they've been up yes. and down too.
Yes. Yeah, right. And I look at it and I go, look, you and I did that podcast that night where I still can't believe what happened. They were up 20 in the third quarter yeah. in a game 7 on their home floor. I think it's fair to say that if they would have gone, they could have beaten Dallas, and they could have very well been the NBA champions last year as well, right? I know they are not as good, but you know I have always held true to this. The veteran teams win. 36, I believe it is now 37 of the last 41 NBA champions, because we have to apply Boston last year, have at least made a conference final in the 3 years before they won. Okay. There are extenuating circumstances. Okay. One is the 94 Rockets. Jordan goes and plays baseball. One is the 2008 Celtics. They add Garnett and Ray Allen. One is the 2015 Warriors. They were on their upper trajectory. That was their first breakthrough. And they had not been to a conference finals before then, though they had been to a semifinals. And then the 2020 Lakers, who of course added Anthony Davis, right? So if you take the teams and you say, okay, they didn't really add somebody huge, right? Generally, what takes place, and you know I always talk about playoff scars, that generally what we have seen over the history of the NBA is there's a reason that those teams end up in those NBA finals. They've been to that moment, and then they got through that moment, and then they take the next step, right? And obviously, you know, the Celtics went to the Eastern Conference Finals many times before they ever won
there. They got a lot of scars.
Yeah.
more scars than you need.
Right. And so I think that what we have found, again, maybe this will be different than what NBA history is, but what we have seen throughout time is that veteran teams win and teams that have serious playoff experience under their belt. And so I am always more likely to say that is it is much more plausible to me that that comes out of conferences than the young teams that blew through everybody in the regular season.
I think that's fair to question, you know, young teams, but with OKC,
they're amazing. I mean, they might be the one. They might be the 15 Warriors.
They could be that team. And I think a lot of the parallels are there with the star player, elite defense, yep. to support the youth as well. Because it's not like Steph and Clay and Draymond were old then too. I think Steph was 26. Draymond and Clay, I believe, were both 24 during that playoff run. So SGA's 26. Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren are younger than Clay and Draymond were, but that was a young team pretty much overall, besides yep. Andre Iguodala and David Lee. Granted, he wasn't playing as much, but a lot of the vets were bench guys or rotation guys.
And they'd been to the playoffs, I think, twice before. They had yes. not been to a conference finals, but they'd been twice before. This would be extenuating circumstances because OKC's only really been there once
yes.
as a group, but we will see. I think the safe money would be on the vet teams that have been in those super bright light, prepare for one team situations.
Well, with Cleveland, I'm more worried about them right now because Boston. I think Boston is in a significant threat, obviously, especially with Kristaps Porzingis. They've been there, done that. Tatum is playing unbelievable basketball. He's even better than he was last season. Cleveland, Mitchell has fallen off recently. Like Mitchell, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking about something he said to me in an interview, I think 3 years ago, 2 years ago, maybe. I don't even remember like what we were talking about necessarily, what the story was for. It wasn't about Mitchell. It was about, I think, maybe even Rudy Gobert. But I asked him questions about like things he's gotten better at. And he told me earlier in his career, sometimes he would go so hard game to game. He would go so hard in practices that by March, April, or even early in the playoffs, he'd feel himself just completely drained. And he had to learn that the best thing for him sometimes was to rest. The best work that he could do is to rest. And that was a lesson he had to learn over the course of his career in order to have some of the great playoff performances that he did have. He said it kind of built towards being able to do that. Well, this season with Cleveland, what has it been? Full throttle the whole year for the Cavaliers. Right. So I don't know if this is it. I'm not saying that it is, but that what he said to me is just in the back of my mind because Cleveland has gone hard from October all the way through now. And I just wonder if maybe he's hit a wall with the way his shooting has fallen off, especially with the three-pointer falling off. With OKC, their defense has slipped a little bit over this past month because they've been experimenting a lot of too big stuff. Dagnall, their head coach, has talked openly about how they're not as worried about results right now with how that's performing. They just want to get a lot of reps with playing with Chet and Hartenstein on the floor together. So with OKC, it's nice that they have that tool to play with versatility. I'm going to play off what you said with OKC for my bold prediction here because we can wrap the OKC conversation together. My second bold prediction is that the Thunder sweep their first-round opponent. And the reason why I think that's relevant is because everybody's talking about all these lower seeds, the Clippers with Kawhi, and you know, or maybe the Lakers fall, or whoever it is that fall. They can take down the Thunder. Maybe the Thunder don't make the finals. Maybe. I think they will, but maybe they don't, to your point. But they're going to sweep the first round. They just beat the Clippers on Saturday. SGA having
dicey
one of the worst,
call at the end, dicey call,
very dicey. But SGA had one of his worst games of the season. He was 7 for 29, worst field goal percentage he's had all year, worst true shooting percentage. No Chet, no Jalen Williams. And I just think with them, they're just when they have those guys, their defense is unbelievable, Chris.
But that was exactly what's going to happen. They played a 103-101 game in that game,
but their defense can do that.
Somebody's going to drag them into the mud. And
maybe later.
The thing that I have a concern about with both of the high seeds is who's the second guy that I really count on.
They really need Jalen
Williams.
Because
they are going to sell out on Gilgeous Alexander, and they're going to sell out on Donovan Mitchell. And that's what happens when you get to the playoffs. And I remember this is always stuck in my head. If you go look at usage rates, Russillo did a whole show about this, about how teams that have a guy that's like in the top 20 in usage rate, like the success rate is just not there.
Oh, those and teams like almost never win the finals. Almost never.
His usage rate is through the roof for good reason. He's amazing.
I don't have I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I remember I wrote an article.
He's at the very top of the league. I mean,
I did an article on Harden maybe like 8 years ago. Like it's so outdated at this point, but
no, it still stands. It still stands.
Exactly. And that's where, yes, they need that second guy in the postseason because there's going to be moments where SGA has more games like he did against the Clippers. The Clippers, who also have a great defense, not to take anything away from them. They have great on-ball defenders. They have great interior defense, great help defense. They are the team that's equipped to make things difficult on him in a series. And he might not get to the line as much. His free throw rate dropped last year as well in the postseason. So there's all of these things working against SGA. So they need those other guys to step up. They need to continue shooting the hell out of it like they have in the 2025 calendar year with one of the best three-point percentages in all of basketball. They need all of those things. But I just think their defense is that special. So like everybody talks about these offensive concerns with them, But they have a defense this year that's 7.2 points better than the league average. And according to Thinking Basketball, over the last 25 years, there's been seven teams that have been 7 points better or 7 points or more better for the full season. The Pistons in 04 won the finals. The Spurs in 05 won the finals. The Celtics in 08 won the finals. Those are the three finals winners of the seven. Then there were four losers. Spurs in 04, they lost in the second round to Shaq and Kobe. They also had a middling average offense. Spurs in 2016 lost in the second round. Older team, dominated the regular season, didn't get it done in the postseason. Pacers in 14, they lost in the finals, the Eastern Conference finals to the Heat. They also had a pretty bad offense. The Bucks in 2020 bubble year, losing the second round to the Miami Heat that year. But a lot of those teams, none of them lost in the first round. Most of them had bad or average offenses to pair with their elite defenses. Three of them won the finals, though. And so for OKC, I think that everybody talks about the offense, but that defense is freaking amazing, dude. With the way their guys fly around, lock in, some of the doubles and help that they were throwing at Kawhi, this team does it every night with different schemes. They can play with two bigs, they can play with one big, they can switch everything, they can just play any scheme. And they're locked in. They have no weak links on defense. And that's where I look at them and I'm like, yes, I understand the offensive concerns. But if you're going to be poking holes in every team in the West, I can't poke any holes in their defense. And that's where I feel they're the most safe pick, despite their youth, despite some of the holes that they might have offensively.
All right, this is fair. This is good, because my next one is, regardless of opponent, if Kawhi Leonard is healthy, the Clippers will win at least three first-round games.
Whoa, that's a good prediction. So they send it to a seven-game series at least.
At worst. Look, with Ty Lue, with Ty Lue, Van Gundy, like, that is the last team I would want to face if I'm Houston. I wouldn't want any part.
You might lose in five, Chris, if you're Houston. No, I'm saying
that's the matchup now. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't want any part of that Clippers thing. If Kawhi is healthy, again, the prediction goes completely out of the window. But if you told me that is a healthy Kawhi, that you're getting a healthy Kawhi Leonard, I watched that game that they played against Cleveland, and I know Cleveland kind of sputtered since, right? They had lost they lost to the Kings, and then they lost to the Magic. Like that started it. But they were so impressive in that game, and I was like, whoa, now I don't want any part of this. Kawhi Leonard in that game was the best player on the floor by a wide margin. It was like old Spurs Kawhi. He had four steals. He had 30-something points. It was crazy efficiency, and I'm like, hold on now. Are we going to get, like, top 5-10 player in the world, Kawhi Leonard? Like, is this in the cards? Is this guy going to be able to stay out of the court and play throughout a playoff series? If you're ranking,
like, everybody from the last 3 weeks, like the last 3 weeks player rankings, Kawhi's in the top 10, probably the top 5.
He was unbelievable. I mean, watching him in that game against a team, again, that was admittedly a great, great team. I think that, you know, Lou and Van Gundy are going to be able to scheme something up enough to make your life a bitch, at least two. Yeah. And so I'm giving you another one because you got Kawhi. I would not be surprised if the Clippers ended up making a run at the playoffs, honestly. If you told me he's healthy. If you told me. Because even off the bench, they bring these, like, friggin' condors. They bring Ben Simmons. They bring Derrick Jones Jr. It's like they can fly around and lock you down.
They're huge.
And if you don't have
Bogdanovich, a slow start with the Hawks this year, but he's been great off the bench for them as a scorer too. And he's got size as a two-guard.
And they're all vets. The whole damn team feels like they've been in the league for 12 years. Seriously.
I mean, Chris Dunn was drafted in 2016. He's been around forever too.
Forever. And they fly around everywhere and they just make your life miserable, and they're going to drag, like, these young teams that want to just run up and down the court, they're going to drag you down into the mud. Like, that is I don't know. If Kawhi is healthy, I think the Clippers are actually going to be a real problem.
Well, and I don't think we even said the name. Harden as the second best player on the team.
I know.
It's a different experience with him at this age, with this role, playing next to or behind Kawhi Leonard, who is currently, in the moment, today, one of the 5 to 10 best guys. And if he keeps that up, like Harden Powell, supporting player. Oh my God.
And if Powell gets cracking again, I mean, that's a guy that could get 27 on a random night. And obviously Zubac has had monster games recently. You know, that birthday night.
And he's great
night,
defensively, too.
Oh, my God. Like, I don't know. I think they are. I look at them and I go, this is like the vet scary team that's actually got reps together. And, like, I don't. And they got the coach that's going to spam you. He's going to. They will scheme up somebody and make their life miserable.
If the Thunder face the Clippers, maybe. Maybe it's not a sweep.
It's not going to be a sweep. That team is not getting swept.
I just don't think the Clippers are going to be the 8th seed. I think they're either going to move up or they win that first game and they're the 7. I just can't see them.
And if they're the falling. 7, you would pick them against Houston, wouldn't you?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. Without a doubt.
Right. I just think they're a problem. I mean, I don't want to face them.
No, no questions. And like, if they do win that first round series, second round, you know, 3-6, right now it's Denver, Golden State. Like, they could.
Oh,
win
God.
That series
the
too.
Last thing on earth I'd want to see as a Memphis guy is that team. They would mow Memphis.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be bad. Know. I wouldn't, and I couldn't take it.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with some more predictions. All right, Chris. Next prediction. This player, here's a little quiz for you. Since the All-Star break, this player is averaging 22.3 points, 10.5 rebounds, 9.1 assists, shooting 84.5% from the line, 52.2% from three on 4.2 attempts per game. Who is this player?
22, 10, and 9?
Since the All-Star break.
Cade?
It is Josh Giddey.
Josh Giddey.
Yeah, Mr.
Contract year.
Yep, contract year. Almost had a quadruple double over the weekend. 15 points, 17 assists, 10 rebounds, 8 steals, and that crazy blowout win over the Lakers. My prediction is that he gets paid over $100 million this summer. Maybe even $30 million a year. Because he's been great, Chris. He's been great. All year long, he's been really good for Chicago. He's trending way up towards the end of the season for them. They're just in the play-in right now, but they're 9-6 since the break overall. Giddey's playing some of the best basketball of his life. I was worried when he got traded from OKC to Chicago that his shot would fall apart. He was coached by Chip Ingham there, renowned shooting coach who helped him improve from the line, helped him be a little bit more competent from three-point range, even though it killed him in the postseason. He was sagged off of the shot, fell apart. It didn't work. But he's shooting well this year. It seems like it's continuing to get better. And the defense from him is really good. The overall play seems to be developing. And besides Giddey, the Bulls feel like, you know, things are starting to make a little bit of sense. Zellis looks great.
I will say that was a weird deal. You remember when we talked about it, when that trade happened, like, it was like, we like the Caruso thing, but like, how do you not get one of their picks? They got 700 million picks in Oklahoma City. We were like, you don't have to get a pick. And now, I mean, you got a real decision to make if you're Chicago on like,
I think you got to pay them.
You got to, right?
Have to. And I think you got to look to trade Vooch. He's 1 year left on his contract. Maybe draft a big with your lottery pick. I mean,
make the requisite moves so you can make the play-in again. Okay? Yeah, you just want to be in the play-in every single year.
That's always their priority.
For the next decade. Just make it to the play-in.
That's what they want to do. They want to, you know, get two home playoff games.
Buzelis is for real at some moments.
Oh, my God. He looks great.
Yeah. He's had some moments. It started off real slow and he wasn't getting any clock, but he's had some real moments for sure.
You know, I'm still surprised. Like, there were, I know he worked out for the Hawks, who had the number one pick, took Risa Shea, who's been awesome as of late. Yep. It's kind of crazy. Like, he goes from in consideration for a team at one and some of the other teams in the top 3-4, and he falls to 11. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just strange to me how he fell that far still to this day. Because I think if you're doing a redraft, which Bill and Ryan did on their Sunday pod together, they talked about redrafting the 2024 draft. To me, Buzelis is still top 5. I had him 4th in my rankings last year. He's versatile. He's got size. He can do a little bit of everything. To me, like, he is going to be one of the five best players in this draft class and showed some flashes.
Certainly, is, look, certainly a very safe bet to have a very long career.
Yes, at least as a solid overall role player at like, minimum.
And maybe an outstanding career.
Yes, exactly.
Possible, right? Like, it's in the card. He's at least going to be a really good player for a long, long time, we think. And he might end up being really, really good.
Yes.
Right? There's a chance at that. All right. Let's go with the Dame Giannis pairing is just going to end up being another disappointment pairing of stars. Like, it's just, I thought I was going to like that. And I think you and I were both on the same page with this. Like, once they attained him, like, ooh, this is going to be the, like, this is great, right? You got the perimeter star that can really still get, and it's not like Damian, the craziest thing is they're both having outstanding seasons. You go look at their numbers, and Damian Lillard is having a great season for a guard, and Giannis Antetokounmpo is having one of the best seasons of any NBA player, and it brings me no joy. Like, it might be two players that I love. I loved both of those guys. And then you put them together, and it's just never taken in the way that I thought it was going to take. It's not fun. And I really thought it was going to be fun. Like, they are simultaneously able to be awesome, right? But now they've kind of changed some of the window dressing around them. Obviously, they need, you know, their full complement, which even includes, like, Bobby Portis shouldn't be that important, but he is. And, like, and it's like, I don't know, man. I think that when they got Damian Lillard, I just thought that we were going to look back and it's like, oh, wow, well, you got to face Dame and Giannis. And nobody's talking like that right now. Like, I watched the Pacers work the Wolves tonight, and I'm like, damn, man. I don't know if the Bucks are getting out of the first round if they got to play this team.
I asked Tavistro on Friday who's most to blame in that situation. Like, why is their offense 16th? Why do they have the 16th best offensive rating with Giannis and Dame? 16th. What do you think? Who is most to blame? Is this a Doc Rivers problem? Is there a Giannis issue here? Is it a Dame issue? What do you think?
I think the chemistry has never been great.
With
you
Giannis
watch them
and Dame.
Still, yeah.
But is that Doc's fault or is that Giannis's issue with the screening?
I think part of it is the way they play, and part of it is, I think that. I mean, I don't think Damian Lillard. Never wanted to be there. Everybody knows that
he wanted to be in Miami,
right? He probably will next year, right?
And he didn't come in the last season in shape. He was totally out of shape.
Yeah. And then obviously was busted up at the end of the year. And then we didn't really communicate over the summer and whatever. It's like, I don't know. Like, there's so much that goes to, you know, the only fun things you see are, you know, Giannis, you know, slinging Glorilla in the background when Dame's trying to do interviews in the locker room or something. But, like, when is the last time you remember seeing, like they, it's just never, and maybe it's just personalities, maybe it's, who knows, right? That Lillard was so used to being the man and being the most beloved guy in the world in Portland. I mean, I still love both of those players individually, but I watch it and even this year, there were moments like when they ran through in that in-season tournament and they busted up Oklahoma City, I was like, ah, there it is. And then it just tapered off again. And so I wanted this team to be good. I wanted this team to be, you know, a team that I look at when it comes to the playoffs. And look, I say all this. If they beat the Pacers and then beat Cleveland, it wouldn't be the craziest thing ever, considering they have one of the best five players in the world. They still have that, right? But, and maybe they just don't give a crap about the regular season. That's a possibility that I'm at least holding out there. But in terms of those two together. I thought that combination would be so much more joyful than it has been. In fact, two of the most likable, in my opinion, players in the league, and yet that team has brought me virtually no joy.
Yeah, I mean,
and I don't think it's brought their fan base is frustrated as hell.
No,
it's so weird.
Yeah, and I think like as part of it, like they have to trade Chris Middleton. He's not quite the same. Kuzma,
right?
Bring him in for defense, but it's a clunky fit. Nothing seems to be working perfectly here. Yeah, Haverstro had talked about Giannis's screening and how weak that is. I know Bobby Portis is out, but I still, when he does come back for the postseason, I hope to God we're seeing a lot of lineups that switch everything. Giannis at the five.
Yeah.
Need more of that. You need him to commit to screening. And with Doc Rivers, I still think the offense is in part Giannis with the screening. He wants to slow things down. But with Doc, it's been years of a lack of creativity here.
Just, bro, how do you never see Damian Lillard turning the corner and lobbing it up and this guy just tomahawking it on somebody?
It's not even part of anything. And like, if you look at Dame's screen numbers, his last year in Portland, it was like 14 or 15 off-ball screens per game being set for him where he'd receive the ball. And in Milwaukee this year, I think it's 4 or 5. There's just, it feels like Dame never gets the ball in motion. It feels like everything is stagnant. Everything is slow. Like even the way they get into their sets is slow. The team lacks chemistry. And that's why, yes, as you said, you can't dismiss them entirely because they have Giannis. They have talent. Who knows? Maybe they get hot in the postseason and make a run. But you can't put them at 0%. But it's close. It's a lot closer to 0% than it should be, considering this large sample we have at this point where it's like, okay, I have very few reasons to trust in this team other than the theoretical idea of what they could be.
That's right. And I'm playing both sides of the fence, but the prediction is that they will it will just end in a disappointment that I would have never predicted it ending with, which is like them not even sniffing a conference finals as a tandem.
Well, one of mine was about the Bucks.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I had them flaming out and making major changes this offseason. What those changes will be, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know if it'll be Giannis asking for Doc to be fired or asking for Dame to be traded or asking to be traded himself, but I would expect there's going to be some major changes there. With Doc, real quick with him, did you see the quote he had to Mark Spears? Did you see this? Okay. Mark Spears interviewed Doc, and Doc was asked about some of the blown leads of the playoffs, the 3-1 blown leads, and many that he's had over the years. And Doc says, this is the exact quote, "No one tells the real story, and I'm fine with that. It's unfair in some ways. I don't get enough credit for getting the 3 wins. I get credit for losing. I always say, what if we had lost to Houston in 6? No one cares. One of the things that I'm proud of is we've never been swept. All the coaches have been swept in the playoffs. My teams achieve. A lot of them overachieve, and I'm very proud of that." Are you kidding me?
No, he is kidding you. He does this every year when they lose. I've heard those before. He did that in Philly when they lost.
But it's never any accountability.
No.
Ever.
No. Remember? Ever. Oh, who was it that got in big trouble for, was it J.J. Redick, who's now the coach of the Lakers?
Yeah.
Got in big trouble for calling him out on that, right? On TV.
Yes.
All right, my next one. There's going to be big changes in the offseason NBA-wise from the NBA league office on offsetting star sitting and offsetting teams tanking. Like, this is now the crucible, right? They are going, I'm not sure what they are going to do, Kev, but this is now when you are about to start a $7 billion TV thing. This has been miserable again. You and I recorded at nights, just like we are tonight, for the last 7-8 years. And last season, over and over and over and over again, we would say we're going to record at like whatever, 9 Central or like after the early games, 9:30. And then we would just record at 7 because it wouldn't be Curry versus Jokic, and it wouldn't be Jalen Brunson versus Donovan Mitchell. It would like it was like these Thursday night games, like they hardly ever materialized as we were recording on Thursday nights, and we lamented it last year. And they still got their TV deal, right? He shook hands, he kissed babies, he got it all done. You know, the guy is, while he lacks in leadership by and people think he wants to be the players' friends too much on some level, on another level, he's a great businessman, and that's why the owners, right? He got them that $7 billion deal.
Yep.
But you can't walk into Amazon, and you can't walk into NBC, and you can't walk into all of that with the product that you just turned out this year. You can't. It can't happen. And so they have tried to augment things in the past to what I would say are disastrous results. Nothing's changed, bro. Nothing's changed. You have a handful of guys that try to get to the 65 for sure. But what also has happened, in my opinion, is that once that 65, and again, I'm not smart enough to know all the answers here, but what I'm finding is that then there is a group of guys that aren't going to get to the 65 no matter what. So now, all that stuff, the All-Star, the All-NBA, the Defensive Player of the Year, like all that stuff's off the board, right? So now I'm about to go into this TV deal. I got Amazon all amped up. They're going to spend a bazillion dollars hiring the new staff. I'm going to have NBC. Like, I got to get eyeballs. I got to get people watching this stuff. You've got all kinds of catastrophe going on in terms of the local products and TV deals with the regional sports channels. Some of them still doing that. Some of them have gone to over the air in their own markets like Phoenix has, like Utah has, and others may follow that suit. And so you are now about to come to a TV product problem. And now the reason I say that there will be a come to Jesus like meeting about all of this, whether it's stars, because he is already finding teams and attempting to find teams. And as your buddy Tom Haberstroh said, they're finding their way around it. They're doing the soft quit now.
Yes.
And that's on the tanking teams. So those teams, that's not competitive. And now it's going to get even worse these last 10, 12 games of the season. And then on the other side, you've got the star problem, which is it doesn't even matter if we've got that Saturday night ABC game. You may turn it on and you ain't seeing Jokic and you ain't seeing Murray and you're not, they didn't even, Christian Brown and Julian Strother didn't even play. And then that same night, or then like last week, the Obi Toppin game against the Wolves, they didn't have Halliburton, they didn't have Siakam, they didn't have Miles Turner. And it's like, bro, I'm a fan. I'm tuning this stuff on. I get it. We're to the home stretch of the season. I just think that because of the way the end of this regular season has gone and that it wasn't as big a deal, but they are going to implement things for next season that make it a very big deal, because the last thing on earth is you can do is put out this year's product on new channels.
Because people are just going to not even come over to Amazon, not even going to go over to NBC. No. They just have NBC on every night for years, for decades.
Right.
First time seeing basketball in a hell of a long time.
No,
oh,
you better figure
out. It's not the same as it used to be.
He better figure out how to have an iron fist.
Yes.
And they need to get back to caring about the fans.
Well, Chris, right? That's the key thing here, right? Like, I've always felt like in our role in media, number one, the person to please is the fan. That's being honest with your opinions, saying how you really feel. For the league, obviously it's a business, a multi-billion dollar business, but it's a multi-billion dollar business because of the fans.
And they have put that so far down the list in terms of priorities.
Yes, and you cannot lose the trust of those fans over an extended period of time. And that's where I feel like, in some ways, we're still at the beginning of that trust being lost from fans, feeling like, okay, maybe I won't tune in at 7:30 every night for every game, or maybe I'll just watch the highlights on YouTube, the 10-minute clips, or maybe I'll just watch the reels on Instagram or the TikToks. And the NBA, clearly, they care about those social ratings. They always talk all the time. We're number one sports league online, this and that, blah, blah, blah. Like those 10-minute, 15-minute YouTube video recaps get hundreds of thousands of views within 12, 24 hours. They are hits. They do well. So clearly,
but they got to turn those people into customers.
Yes, exactly. Into customers. And how do you do that? You make the product itself a hell of a lot better on a night-to-night basis and make those games matter a hell of a lot more. And that's where, you know, you got Goldsberry today making a post on social with like, should you do conference-less seating? I respond to that with my idea that I've hammered for years that you hate, let the top three playoff seeds choose their opponent in the first round because that incentivizes teams to win and get top seeding. It makes seeding matter more. It makes the regular season matter more. And therefore teams have to care more about these games. Every game matters more. Regardless, it could be cutting the schedule down to, you know, 58 games or 72 games. There's a hell of a lot of things you could do and debate and argue about. Tanking with teams, whether it's the Wizards at the bottom or some of these other teams, the Utah Jazz, Lauri Markkanen out for a really long period of time, $100,000 fine. The Heat, before they won their most recent game with Wiggins going off, they had lost a ton of games in a row. These teams flattening the lottery odds may have made it less of an advantage to be the worst. It used to be 25% odds to get the number one pick with the worst record. Now it's 14% flat for the top three. But by flattening the odds, you've made those 7, 8, 9, 10 spots for the lottery standings all the more appealing to those teams that say,
well, so,
Miami currently, Chris?
Right.
Miami has the 8th best odds of moving up in the draft. That's a 26% chance.
I had a guy send this to me. I'll shout him out on the mismatch because when I look at the name, but I want to throw this to you. He, because we were trying to come up with ideas about this, and a guy hit me up on Twitter, and here's what he said. I actually liked this idea. So the idea was, because Jacoby was like, hey, if we flatten the odds, but the problem with the flattening of the odds, one of the unintended consequences is you could say, all right, well, if I don't really care about being in the play-in all that much anyway, now you even add more tanking teams because they're going, well, geez, I've got as good a chance as the friggin' Wizards of getting the number one pick, right? So that's a tough one. So a guy sent to me, he goes, how about this? And I had never thought about this before. So what they've done in the past is if they don't want things to happen, you know, if the owners don't care about the money, i.e. Ballmer, i.e. Ishbia, i.e. whoever, they say, all right, basketball penalties. Like, that's even when Ishbia was just talking about it, or whoever talks about it, they talk about the basketball penalties. Even the new ownership of the Celtics brought this up, right? Like, hey, man, like, they're going to take away your draft picks, and, like, you can't – if you're in the second apron multiple times, you got real basketball penalties. So a guy sent this to me, and I actually thought this was pretty smart. I haven't thought it through or stress tested, but I'll throw it to you. He said – here's what you should do. Every year you're in the lottery, the next year, so the first year, you got a chance at every pick. The next year, in consecutive years, you can't get the number one pick. The next year, in consecutive years, you can't get the number two pick. The next year, in consecutive years, you can't get the number three pick. The next year, so if you're now, if I suck for four straight seasons, I'm in the lottery every year. Every year, I don't even have a chance at Cooper Flag. I don't even have a chance at Cooper Flag if I'm going to be in the lottery this year. So I actually think that could work. I actually think that if there was a penalty for being sorry, that some of these teams would look at it and go, all right, well, that's not an option. You know, if you're trying to deter this, because come on, bro, who wants to watch Jamal Shedd, Colin Castleton, Bobo Malone, and who? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. That's not an NBA product. The only other way I know is by hitting them in the pocketbook and saying, all right, if your best players aren't going to be playing, then fans can get a refund. Right? Same way that if I go to a Broadway show and I'm going to go see right? Like, say I spent a fortune to go see Jake Gyllenhaal and Denzel Washington in this new show that they're doing, right? Othello. bro, if Denzel Washington comes down with the flu or laryngitis, I can, like, I get a refund. Like, it's not who I signed up to go see, right? And so I don't know. Like, it seems like the only thing they will respond to is in some level pocketbook, and on another level, basketball penalties.
Sure.
Because, you know, this,
I mean, that's the way it is at the other end. It is both. It's luxury tax,
yep,
and penalties. It's right. Both at the other end of things for teams that are pricey. So I think that idea is really interesting. I think I would prefer, instead of outright preventing a team from getting a pick entirely, they have dropped odds, like -5% or whatever the number is that you do, where, like, you have a hit for percentage odds for consecutive years being in the lottery, or whatever the threshold is for being in the bottom five, for being in the bottom four, whatever, wherever you set the line. Something like that could make some sense to me, but, like, outright refusing a pick, that feels a little extreme, you know, because, like, sometimes, like, rebuilds
happen. Well, but it doesn't affect the team that has catastrophe, though, right? Like, I mean, like, the year of the Warriors, it's like, all right, this is just a lost year. Like, it doesn't hurt you if you're that. It only hurts you.
But like, let's say, take the Spurs, for example. They win the prize last year. They get the number one pick. And then this year, they wanted to make the playoffs. They wanted to make a push.
Yeah,
wanted to get better. And then Wemby gets this injury. Other guys go out, blah, blah, blah. Now they're going to be in the lottery for certain. Should they really not be allowed any chance?
Have Wemby teaming up with Cooper Flagg. Sure, what are you talking about? But do you want anybody to win the title ever again?
that's just one example, though. That's just one example. Okay. I mean, you could say it about, like, the Wizards. They're in a rebuild. Like,
oh, they suck.
But rebuilds take time.
Like, they shouldn't even be allowed.
Does it
the
make
product they put out on the floor? They don't even run plays.
But does it make rebuilding even more difficult for some of these teams?
Good.
Than it already is.
Stop being so crappy.
Should they bring back the Mike Zarin lottery wheel?
Where I'm fine with, like, that, too.
Something like that, yeah.
I'm fine with that, too.
I'd be very intrigued by that. Well, coming this week, I have my NBA draft guide coming out on Wednesday.
Oh!
On Wednesday, that's coming out. So,
all right.
That's coming out Wednesday. We'll take one more break and then come back with a few more predictions. All right, Chris, it's March Madness this week. You mentioned it earlier.
I made my fifth prediction a March Madness one for you as
okay.
well.
Okay, good. So I got one right here. You watched him on Thursday, Friday, whatever day it was, Colorado State versus Memphis. And Colorado State, they almost got to the Sweet 16, almost beat Maryland. Neek Clifford gets picked in the lottery. If you watch March Madness, this might shock you, Chris. This might shock you. He did not score great in the tournament, but he showed off his defensive versatility. He showed off his playmaking.
The last pass for should have been the game-winning three.
Awesome pass.
Cross
from
court.
From the low post, over the head, bullseye pass, perfect. Neek Clifford didn't shoot threes well in the two March Madness games, but I think he showed off everything else, which makes him such an appealing prospect for some of these teams that, like, late lottery range. Portland, they're making progress right now. Dallas, if they bring Kyrie back, if they bring AD back, who surprisingly made his return on Monday night. Dallas, some of these teams, Atlanta in the late lottery, Houston in the late lotto. Are these teams that are trying to win really going to take raw player who nobody knows what they're going to be like in 5 years? Or are they going to take somebody like Neek Clifford, who shot the hell out of the ball this year for Colorado State, who can run pick and roll, who can post up, who's super high IQ on defense, who can do all the little things that help a team win today? Neek Clifford, I think, could help teams today with some of his role player qualities. I think Neek Clifford goes in the late lottery to who? One of those teams that feels like they're ready to try to push winning right now.
What did you think about him?
Yes,
I like Neek Clifford, yes. And I will tell you that in getting ready for that game, obviously he took down my team. I do think he's not a mega athlete.
No, he's not.
And so that's a little right? Like, you just have to be so good at everything else if you're not going to be a mega athlete. But I will say that this year, he was on KenPom's rankings. You know, KenPom really does the best job of all the college basketball analytics. So he does a player ranking for the year. Number one player ranking for the year analytically was Cooper Flagg. Number two, Jani Broom at Auburn. Number three, interesting player, Walter Clayton, who's been good at Florida.
Oh, those shots he hit at the end of that game. Oh,
but anyway,
God.
I'll tell you, Neat Clifford was number six in the country on his list. And he also, he has a stat called game MVPs. So what am I responsible for? And so, like, there's, you know, obviously, and you're going to see a bunch of names up there of which you are familiar. Kalkbrenner at Creighton, Broom, Cooper Flagg, et cetera. Neat Clifford was number one. He had 20 games where he was his team's MVP this year. Yeah. So I mean,
they were nothing without him.
And look, one stop on that Derek Queen unbelievable play from being in the Sweet 16. And then he would really, you know, to your point, really fly up the board. I feel like as I'm watching this, I am kind of, there's a lot of prospects left in this deal that I think could have a lot, they could have a lot on the line.
Derek Queen included.
Yeah, and the Florida kids, right? Mm-hmm. That Clayton kid, if they made a run, or the big kid, the Australian center. Yeah, yeah,
really, like, talented.
Yeah, there's, and obviously there's a bunch of them.
Houston's got guys as well.
Yep.
Uzan, here and there. Tugler.
The kid that stepped up for, you know, I have a thing for guys that can dribble, pass, and shoot. Also, not a mega athlete, but Canupa.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's so good.
He does everything.
Oh, yeah.
He's dribble, awesome. Pass, shoot, and he's a super competitor. Like, I really liked him. But anyways,
even Tyrese Proctor, junior for Duke, like, he was supposed to be a one and done. And it took him 3 years to become like, oh, wait a minute, is this guy a first round pick again? Elite shooter, versatile defender. Like, I love that dude.
So I'm going to give you an interesting one.
Okay.
You're going to like this because I'm going to bet he's low on your draft guide. Because I went and looked at, you know, Gavoni and them put out their list.
I can't wait to see who you say. I can't
wait. This guy was like 29th, I think, of the tournament players. And they said he might go back to school. I don't know if that's true or not. But I see him in all these mock drafts. And then he was in the second round on their mock draft. I promise you, Kevin, there is a less than 0% chance that Boogie Fland goes in the second round of the NBA. That is asinine. Asinine. Like, go watch before he broke his thumb. And I get it. So they're blaming him, right? They started off 0-5 in the SEC, and then they were better without him because they got a vet. Like, he's a freshman, bro. He's a freshman that came in, and what you're finding is a lot of these teams, like, look, the Rutgers thing was a disaster. These teams are friggin' Jani Broom's like 40 years old. You know, that whole Auburn team is like 24. You know, when you're an 18-year-old coming, it is hard to be awesome now in college basketball as a freshman. Really hard. But if there is one thing that you know I have stuck to over the years, and this goes back 20 years for me covering him in Memphis, if there's one thing, say whatever you want about him. Calipari knows guards, bro. He knows guards. And this kid's got size. He can speed up. He can slow down. You know, he I think he only played like 20 minutes in their last game or something, whatever. But he's going to get a chance now again in this Sweet 16, and maybe he'll be able to, you know, they're saying he's in practice more or whatever. But when I was going through the list and I'm looking at like the different mock drafts and whatever, I'm like, come on. There's no way. There is no way. Go watch his high school tape. This kid has like NBA skills.
So you think he's a first round pick?
And he has, yes, 100%.
I got him early mid second right now. I mean,
that's why it's a prediction.
I may change that over, you know, the next few months. I want to see how he does in pre-draft workouts. If you know, like you said, if he declares, I would assume he'll at least test the waters, but that dude's a tone setter, man.
We can go through 1,000 of these Calipari guards. We can go through them.
I mean, just ignore the Harrison twins. Forget about them.
Forget about Ulis. And Ulis.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's some. There's some.
But there are good college players. A lot of
those generally,
guys.
I mean, even Dillingham, bro, Dillingham's going to be a pro for a long time and can get buckets.
He's a bucket getter.
He can get buckets. Look, but this Boogie Flynn, he's not small either.
No, he's like 6'2", 6'3", but he's strong.
And,
he's really
strong.
And he's
like a New York guard. Like, I don't know, man. The whole thing went to hell for him, right? When he broke, you know, he got the injury, he had the surgery, the team got better without him, that whole thing. But people have gotten way too low on him. Way too low on him.
Yeah. I mean, I think with Boogie Fland, the team's a lot like it has a different complexion with him on the floor because of
for
his
sure.
tone setting. Like, he's a good defender, gritty, like, he's got a dog in him, right? Like, to me, when I watch him, he's one of those guys I always think of your mantra, guys who won't suck.
Yeah.
And he's just one of those guys. He's not going to suck. Like, maybe he ends up a low end rotation guy and not like a high end starter, but he's not going to suck.
Bro,
you're going to feel good when he's in the game.
Boogie Fland was at the top tier of this class a year ago. And this class is awesome.
Yeah.
There's tons of awesome freshmen in this class.
It is a good class. And the thing with him is, like, I think he's a better shooter or will be a better shooter than he showed this season.
Like, it's Flag, Knupel, and Bailey, and Dylan Harper. Like, there's a lot
of. What do you think about the Rutgers kids? Like, do you make anything of them missing the entire tournament?
Well, sure, I make something of it, but I also think they're crazy talented. And I also think it is a function of college basketball now. I had a, you heard Rick Pitino's thing about him. Like, they're not, didn't even go to a high school gym. They're not getting those players. As long as college basketball is this way, so what they're doing. I had an NBA agent tell me that the way it's going to be now is there's going to be like the top tier, right? Top 25, top 50, whatever, right? These kids are going to go somewhere and like you might recruit them, and like if they're that good, the rest of them are gonna have to go to small schools and prove themselves
and then transfer.
Yes.
Yep.
Because I'm not, because bro, you're sitting there waiting for a Kansas or a Kentucky offer and it ain't coming. You're sitting there waiting, like they're gonna go take the best player at North Dakota State before they take your at this guy has already proven he can play college basketball and be awesome at it. And so this transfer portal that just opened is infinitely more important towards college basketball than recruiting. It used to be we would celebrate like hell the recruiting classes, but that's just not the way it is anymore. And so I think that you build your team with freshmen, it's really, really hard. I mean, I give a lot of credit to Duke, and it may come back to bite them, but the age of some of these teams, I mean, the best team for the majority of this season was Auburn, and Auburn is as old as the freaking Thunder. Like, they are.
You know who I really
like
on Auburn?
Their average age is like 23-something. Bro, their second best player is as old as Zion.
It's crazy.
Zion's been in the league for six years.
It's nuts. I mean, so, you say they're second best player, but I think secretly it could actually be Pettiford. Todd Pettiford.
Yeah, okay. He's the only one that's a freshman, right?
I had Mark Titus on the pod last week, and he had Pettiford as one of the guys that he feels is like 100% going to be a success in the NBA. And you see that in the tournament.
Yep.
The dude plays heavy minutes off the bench. He's not a starter, but he plays starter level minutes. The feel for the game, the shooting, like just the grit that he brings to the floor, the confidence. He doesn't play like a freshman. And I've got him in my middle of the first round. I think he's the best prospect on Auburn, even though Broome obviously is the star of that team.
Who's the big guy you love? Who is it? Is it Kalkbrenner? Is it
Mo Bamba this year?
Is it the guy? Is it
my
the guy? Is it the that huge guy at who was it? Creighton obviously has Kalkbrenner, but who is the one? Is it Mara?
Ivicic?
Mara or who is
Abada from UCLA?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I bet
O'Connor loves this guy.
Honestly, like I think. All right, let me tell you this about bigs in this year's draft class. So I got Derek Queen pretty high up. I like Derek Queen a lot. I really like Derek Queen.
He's like Cousins, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like Boogie.
Cousinsy.
Yeah, that's who Marcus Morris compared him to me in our pod together. I like Derek Queen a lot. I like Malawach as a lottery pick as well. I like Raynaud from Stanford, Maxime Raynaud, maybe that, but I don't have him like top 10. To me, like in this year's class, I'm thinking about who are the bigs that can shoot threes and just offer a ton of size. Kalkbrenner.
Oh, you mentioned do you love the guy at Michigan? What's his name?
I'm not a big Danny Wolf guy.
Danny Wolf.
I'm not a big Danny Wolf guy.
You don't love Danny Wolf.
I mean, he's a fun player to watch. He can theoretically shoot threes. He likes to do crazy passes. I just don't trust him defensively. And he's not like the I'm thinking who are the guys that can be like a poor man's Brook Lopez?
Yeah.
Who can offer size? Kalkbrenner, that type of guy, which is why I think he could go late.
Kalkbrenner's the one.
He's the one. He's the guy.
He's the one that falls.
But I like, did you watch any Illinois games in the first or second round?
Ivicic? Oh, the Lithuanian guy. I like him.
Yeah, Ivicic.
Is that his name? Yeah, no, Ivicic. I'm talking about the guard.
The guard. Okay, no. I was going to say, because Ivicic is Croatian.
No. The Lithuanian guard. He's supposed to go in the lottery.
Oh, yes. Jakachonis.
Jakachonis.
Yeah.
He didn't have a very good game in that.
He turns the ball over all the time, but I like Ivicic.
I went out of my way to watch him and the guy from BYU that can't shoot. Igor?
Yeah. Yegor Demon.
I like
Richie Saunders, his teammate. Richie Saunders had a great second round game, 20 plus points. Richie Saunders is freaking good, dude. I think he's a late.
Do you
late
like
first.
The big guy at Florida?
Condon solid. Yeah.
Got a little Hartenstein in him.
Yes, that's my comp for him in the draft guide. Yes, it is. That's my comp for him.
He does have a little Hartenstein in him when I watched him.
He's like a slightly smaller version of him. He goes hard. Oh, dude, he sets a tone. He can pass.
Yeah.
I really like him a lot.
I don't think he's a bum. I think he actually can play.
Are you a Danny Wolf guy since you asked me about him?
No, you're not Danny Wolf. I mean, it's fine. It's fine, but I mean, I just don't know where he fits in the NBA if you can't hit threes. And he shoots like 60-something percent from the free throw line, they said the other day. Yeah,
I just don't trust his touch. It's like, yes, you'll see him take some step-back threes sometimes. You're like, ooh, wow, 7-foot white dude who can pass behind the back. And he can take step-back threes. But then you look at his numbers, it's like, oh, wait, 27% from three. And, yeah, he's just not consistent. I just don't trust the jumper or the touch at all with him. But
the one good thing about that. Like, we don't have a bunch of these teams, the lower seeds that have moved on. But we are going to get to see, I hope we get to see Mark Sears versus the Duke kids. Hope we get to see we've got a chance to get a bunch of these prospects all kind of in games against each other.
I hope Mark Sears wins back our hearts.
I know.
I do. I know. It hasn't been the
As
best
college
year for
Brunson.
Him. I know. I hope he wins it back. Chris, it felt good potting with you again.
Yeah, man. It was good to be here.
It felt
good to be here.
Things good with you? Life good?
Yeah, man. Mismatch still rolling. Mm-hmm. Even though you left me, Jacoby.
It's more like the match now.
Jacoby's been great.
It's the match with you two now.
It's not the match. We have I don't know if we're gonna get to do the pod. He's about to have a fourth on the way. We're on baby watch right now.
Oh wow.
We're a baby watch for the Jacobys. So
what was this thing a few weeks back?
Might be another little Jacoby.
Throwing away kids' photos.
That's what he said. Yeah, he doesn't like their art projects. He doesn't like their art projects.
Come on.
He doesn't care about them. That's what happens when you get three kids.
Yeah,
he's got a son, then he's got two twins, and now he's got another one on the way.
I guess I was a only child who got all of the love. So there's boxes of one child stuff.
I know.
But three children, that's probably a lot of stuff.
It's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. Yeah. He's very, very cynical about the whole thing now.
And a fourth coming?
Jeez. Yeah. Fourth one on the way. Oh, any God. Day now. Any day.
Wow.
So I hope we get to do the pod because he may very well be in the hospital, so I may be calling you if I have to find somebody.
A little home at home. Let me know.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you joining me.
Yep.
Thank you to Chris Vernon from the mismatch, old friend at the ringer, for joining me on today's episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Give us a like on YouTube, subscribe on the podcast feeds. It really does help us out. Thank you to Brett for producing us tonight. And thank you again to the best, my old friend, Chris Verner, for joining me today. Hope you have a great week. We got my draft guide coming out on Wednesday. Look for that on Yahoo. We might do a pod about that as well and get another pod coming back again on Friday.